plate a potential nugget.
And as we sort of come towards the end of the podcast conversation, Dan, you also talk about the risk of probably overusing our strengths if we don't apply it thoughtfully. So can you talk a little bit about what are the watchouts in the context of the highlight reels and strengths? What are some of the things that we should bear in mind so that we don't tip over to the wrong side?
That's right. This is another one where I'm really glad you're bringing it up, because practically speaking, there is a concept called Achilles heel, which is another way to say overused strengths. It's another way of saying that your strengths become a weakness if you overdo them. And I have tried to think about this so much because I never would want to lead people astray. And I'd never want them to stop being humble about how much they have to grow. And I'd also never want anyone to think that they're perfect. You know, we're all flawed and we're all going to die flawed. It's really more about how do we discover the way to do the best part of ourselves more often. And so in terms of this Achilles heel and overplaying our strengths, I'll give you a specific example that I wrote about in the book. In my own self, one of the things that I can do really well is kind of be an extrovert that forms quick relationships. And I guess apparently good at like quick vulnerability, where I'll say very true things, humbling things about myself, which allow people to open up around me, frankly, to kind of feel comfortable and psychologically safe. So as an extrovert, I get a buzz from that. I go around. So that works great in a classroom setting. It doesn't work great when I'm out on a date with my partner and I end up spending 10 minutes talking to the bartender, another 4 minutes talking to somebody that seems interesting on the way back, and then maybe a 10 minutes talking to a waiter. And I'm intrigued. I'm all lit up. I think that this is exciting and interesting, but I'm getting dopamine release and I'm self-expressing and it's all very exciting. But it's not what that date was for. So the way that I'm phrasing it these days is to think about the impact that you're trying to create with your strengths. And that's going to vary a lot depending on the context. And if you're not careful, overusing your strengths actually can get in your own way, you know? But if you're careful, and if you're thoughtful, and if you're intelligent about playing to your strengths, you can't really do them too much. The way Marcus Buckingham put it is, you'd never want to turn down your strengths. You'd want to turn up your strengths, but use them intelligently. And so that's something where I'm always working on that myself. I think maybe we all are, but it's just that space of both staying humble and also that space of using it to create the impact that you seek, not using it for using its sake. Does that make sense to you, by the way? Am I expressing that clearly?
Makes a lot of sense, Dan. Okay. The way I interpret it is for us to be aware, right? Not to just sort of blindly turn it up all the time, but to your point, be aware of where we are and the outcomes we are trying to drive. Yes. And ensure that we are thoughtful about the application and the context in which we apply it. So that's the way I interpret it.
That's right. And it's really interesting to think about how, like, going back to my own thing and just being honest with myself, even in the situation of, like, say, going out with my partner versus going out with some friends, it can even be the same literal setting. Let's call it a pub in London. But if the impact that I want to make with my partner is, let me use my strengths with her, I might play up my natural curiosity and sort of entertain her with a story that I heard that day and maybe a piece of science that I read that I'm intrigued by. And that is playing to my strengths. Whereas if I'm with five friends and they're having a good time, then it may be perfectly fine for me to talk to the bartender and light up their world a little bit. And then on the way back, talk to a wait staff and just kind of light them up a little bit, because that's not only playing to my strengths, but it's giving me that dopamine rush. And it is, it's a certain awareness and a certain intelligence of using that. I find that really interesting and practical. So I'm actually really glad you brought it up, even to allow me to relive it again.
The point about awareness is a good one. Very often we end up using our strength like a hammer, looking for a nail to hit. The key is not to use it as a habit, but being aware and using it contextually. The distinction between habits and awareness was brought to my attention by Devdutt Patnaik, the well-known mythologist, when he was on the podcast a few years back.
See, this concept of habits is a Western idea. It comes, Indian, you see, habit is a bad word in Indian philosophy. It's a bad word. Therefore, you're continuous. Another word for habit is conditioned. I'm conditioned to do it. Conditioning, that's a Pavlovian response, right? A dog has a habit of salivating whenever the bell rings. And the West has made it a virtue. Action without thought is habit. Repetitive action without thought is habit. And if you look at the many of the cultures in the West, they are like domesticated animals. At a particular time, they'll get up and run. At a particular time, they'll get up. So there is, it's this kind of a, they are on a treadmill all the time. And this is seen as virtue. You know, driving in the car with a coffee in your hand. Nobody sees in America that this is tragedy. It's a tragedy. You can't enjoy your coffee. You can't enjoy your drive. You have glamorized slavery. You have glamorized slavery. And nobody sees it because you are all the Gurujis in their white coats with their chin, what is that called? The fist on the chin photographs. You know, those photographs that you see are telling you, therefore it must be right. Nobody's questioning, what is the habit? And habit has been somehow projected as a good thing. Indian thought is all about awareness. It's all about awareness. Why are you doing what you're doing? Why are you doing what you're doing? Why are you not doing what you're not doing? And once you're aware, then you realize what is of value to you and what is not of value to you. So you are not in a habit, then breaking habits becomes difficult. And then breaking habit becomes, there are good habits, there are bad habits. Habits are good and bad depending on context. You know, so you will find people behaving in, that's why I always find, you know, when expats come to India, they have a tough time because the habit is suddenly in this new context, they don't know. Because, oh my God, there is no place to run. There is no place to, oh my God, they don't have this thing because the habit, right? They become the animal. You have become like an animal. And habit really goes to the lower part of your brain, not the upper part of your brain. And your habit is about avoiding life. You do habits like, it's an addiction.
It's like autopilot.
It's an autopilot. No, and it's addictive. Like I have a habit of writing, but it's addiction. If I don't write, I get withdrawal symptoms, which means I've trained my body to be in pain when I don't do it and to get pleasure when I do it. And I'm not aware of it. I'm just doing it mechanically. So we are an awareness culture. Awareness, 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 not habit culture. Habit culture, empathy goes away.
Like Dan says, we need to be acutely aware of the context we are in and then decide if it makes sense for us to use our strengths or not, rather than blindly applying our strengths.